Hello and welcome to First Free Will Baptist Church for our digital series on Easter. We welcome you to our site. We hope that you enjoy our website. It's brand new. Take a look around and leave a comment, send us an email, tell us how you like it. Our lesson for today, if you want to go ahead, if you have your Bible's presence, we're going to be in Exodus chapter 12 and Psalms chapter 91. As we're getting into our Easter season, I wanted to go ahead and start an online digital series. So kind of like a podcast of sorts. We don't have visual capabilities at our church just yet, but we will in the coming years. Or hopefully within this next coming year, we'll have that for our church. But right now, we're just on audio. And so we hope that you enjoy this series. And if the coronavirus breaks before then, you can finish this Easter series with us in person. We would love to have you here. In hopes, we're going to be preaching this series in hopes that it will not only help you, but also help this time be less stressful and difficult during this outbreak that we're having. We know it can be stressful. Kids are home. The jobs are shutting down, and we know that everybody's at a high point, high stress, high irritation level. So we just hope that this series can bring a little peace to your homes. Our scriptures today will be in Exodus chapter 12 and in Psalms 91. And before we get into that, our first point deserves a little bit of context. There's an extreme amount of unrest and fear that leads up to the final plague in Egypt, which is where we're going to be studying and examining later. But prior to that, I want us to give a context of all the things that they went through prior to this. If you're not familiar with it, when Israel was being relieved of Egypt, God sent Moses and Aaron to go and perform these great miracles to give not only Pharaoh the understanding that God was the one that was in control and he wanted his people to be free, but also give his people an understanding that God was going to do great things through Moses and Aaron, and that they were capable of doing such. So just in the context, I want us to study over these 10 plagues that went in just to help us understand what these people, both God's people, the Jews during that time, and also the Egyptians were going through. The very first plague that happened there in Exodus was the water was turned to blood. Now, and this can mean a lot of different things and how it could have happened and what God could have done, but truthfully what we've given in the Scripture is that God truly just turned the water into blood. Nothing died, nothing decayed. It literally just turned to blood. And if you go into a study, and we don't have the time to do it today, but every one of these plagues was a direct fight against the gods of which the Egyptians worshipped. So the very first thing is they turned all the water into blood. They could not use the water. They could not drink the water at that very moment. You can imagine if they took all of our water away, how stressful that would be. But then also they sent frogs by the masses. There were frogs in the bedrooms, frogs in the kitchens, frogs in the streets. There were frogs everywhere. And that may not mean it more than just an inconvenience to us, but to the Egyptians, that meant a lot more. That means that their gods were no longer in control. Remember, it was a direct effect to their gods. The third thing that happened is that there were lice in every place. Lice, and as many of y'all have attested to and many times in our lives, when we have kids and family members of ours who have lice, lots of little bites and nicks, and more of an irritation more than anything. But once again, this was a direct assault to the Egyptian gods and their way of life. The fourth plague was flies. Flies that filled the air in the masses. Small clouds would flow throughout the streets. It would go into houses and in and out, and flies would just completely go over it. And then after these inconveniences that we see, we really start to see some major destruction happen. In the fifth plague, we see that the livestock and their food supplies began to perish. We see that all of their cows, all their livestock began to perish. And with that, their food supply and also the fear that comes among that. If you would imagine having all of your wealth in trade being in meats and livestock and those things being taken away from you, Everything about your life is dwindling from one place to other. Your water's gone. You're being plagued by frogs and lice and flies. And now all of your livestock are disappearing. And then six, we see a very personal thing happen to the individuals. They said that boils were upon every dweller of the land, upon the animals and upon the people that were there. Boils and disease outranked them. And then the seventh plague was fire and hail came down from heaven. And we see, and it says even the fire went across the ground. To me, this is probably one of the most cinematic parts of this. If you will, just take a minute and in your mind's eye, as you're listening to this, imagine after going through all that you've gone through, the blood has turned to water, you're dealing with frogs and flies and lice, and you're dealing with all the many things that have happened. Your livestock are falling down. And then in the midst of all that, you begin to have boils and hail and fire come down from heaven and begin to hit homes and begin to hit what remaining livestock that you have and begin to hit your crops and begin to hit your neighbors. It's an amazing thing to see. And when you put yourself inside their predicament, their scenario is much worse than ours. We have one virus. One virus is going around, and granted, it is one that has caused panic and chaos everywhere it is mentioned. There are people who are buying up toilet paper left and right, sanitizer left and right. They're hoarding it to make a dollar. They're doing everything they can to not only thrive in the midst of a crisis, but also survive. We see here that their plagues were so much worse than ours. Then we get down to the final three. We see locusts that ate every green thing. Not only were their cattle dying, and not only did all the hail and fire that came down from heaven destroy things, but now every herb, every green thing, every wheat that the locusts would come in and they would eat, so they no longer had food. Then this one is rather important, and I don't want us to skip by over it, but I want us to see in the very ninth plague that happened here, is that there was darkness that was so thick, it actually says that you could feel it. Now, and I don't know how to describe that. I really, even as a speaker and somebody who has studied scriptures and somebody who understands this to a finer degree than most individuals who pick up a Bible, I still find it difficult to examine and to verbalize how immense that darkness must have been. Now, this is going to play a very important part in what we're going to take out of this later, and I want you to see something here, that darkness fell upon these people, and it was so dark that they could feel it. And then we get to the last plague, and the last plague is where we're going to have our study. If you'll turn with me in Exodus chapter 12, we're going to start in verse 1. We're going to read 13 verses together. Exodus chapter 12, verse 1, it says, "And the Lord spake unto Moses and Aaron in the land of Egypt, saying, This month shall be unto you the beginning of months, and it shall be the first month of the year to you. Speak ye unto all the congregations of Israel, saying, In the tenth day of this month they shall take to him every man a lamb, according to the house of their fathers, and the lamb of for their house. And in their household be too little for a lamb, let him and his neighbor next unto his house take it accordingly to the number of the souls. Every man according to his eating shall make your count for the lamb. Your lamb shall be without blemish, a male of the first year. Ye shall take it out from the sheep and from the goats, and ye shall keep it up unto the 14th day of the same month. And the whole assembly of the congregation of Israel shall kill it in the evening." Now we're going to pause right there, and I want to state this so that you and I can get a better grasp for this. They took it in as a pet, if you will. They took it in to them for 14 days. They separated it. It slept with them. It ate with them. It was a part of their household just like everything else was. And then they were commanded on that last day to kill it on that evening. Verse 7 of Exodus chapter 12 says, "And they shall take of the blood, and they strike it on the two side posts and on the upper doorposts of the house, wherein they shall eat it. And they shall eat of the flesh of that night, roast with fire and unleavened bread, and with bitter herbs they shall eat it. Eat not of it raw, nor sodden at all with water, but roast with fire, his head with his legs, and with the pertinence thereof. And ye shall let nothing of it remain until morning. And that which remaineth of it until the morning, ye shall burn with fire, and thus shall ye eat it, and the loins girded, and your shoes on your feet, and your staff in your hand, and ye shall eat it in haste. It is the Lord's Passover. Then we get to verse 12 and verse 13, and I want us to transition into our topics. Verse 12 says, it says, for I will pass through the land of Egypt this night, and I will smite all of the firstborns of the land of Egypt, both man and beast, and against all the gods of Egypt I will execute judgment. I am the Lord. And the blood shall be to you for a token upon the houses where ye are. And when I see the blood, I will pass over you, and the plague shall not be upon you to destroy you when I smite the land of Egypt. Such an incredible topic. And the dramatics of this, the severity of this, doesn't necessarily apply to us with the coronavirus, but I do want, there are some very applicable things that I want us to learn from here. In the midst of our quarantine, in the midst of us having to do church a different way, there has to be some great application, and I believe there is. And if you'll just hold on with me with these three points, I would like to pastor you just for a moment. The very first thing I want us to see is that God protected his people in the very center of one of the most awful and devastating times ever recorded in history. We see all of these plagues happen to a single people, to a single place. It's amazing to think about how, now granted, we just had one virus, but could you imagine if we had a water shortage? Could you imagine if we had natural disasters happen? Could you imagine if all of our food supply had gone bad? And then imagine our awe and our wonder if every one of our children, the very first one of our children, all passed away at the same night. It is literally probably one of the scariest moments ever documented in history to an entire nation. And we see a lot of similarities, especially spiritually, that these people must have gone through as we're going through even right now, that God protected them, that God protected every person that was under his wing in the midst of all that chaos, in the midst of all that hardship. The very first thing I want us to talk about God's protection here is that the people had to endure, if not directly, which I believe, I don't believe that God sent boils to his people. And I don't believe that the hellfire and came down from heaven and destroyed their homes. But rather, I do believe that they felt the very pains that the Egyptians felt, if not directly and indirectly. I believe it is impossible to have total darkness, as it's mentioned here, that did not fall upon God's people as well. I believe that if a total darkness, because if you've ever been in a dark room, if you've never done this, it's an amazing thing, and I've done it several times in my life. If you go into a dark room and you board up the walls and you clean out everything and you make sure all the electronics are disconnected and it's completely dark, there's nothing. It's amazing how you can't see anything until you get 1 ounce of light. You light a match. You put a lighter, you light a candle, and it doesn't seem very bright at that moment, but it fills the room. Now, I want you to see something, that the total darkness that is mentioned, and it's so dark that people can feel it, there had to be an absence of light anywhere in the vicinity. It had to be dark. So I find it almost impossible that the God's people did not experience that very same fear, that very same pain, that feeling of darkness that happens without it affecting everybody. I believe God's people suffered as well. Those that respected and feared the proclamations of Moses and Aaron found favor when they were rescued from such a place, specifically hell. If you look back in chapter 9, verses 20 and 21, it says, for those who feared God and those who took to heart the things that Moses was saying, and they brought their cattle in from the hail and from the fire, God saved those families and their livestock because they obeyed. Because they obeyed, God respected and God saved them from those plagues. The third thing here, and I want us to be very clear, and I want it to be a benefit to you. It says here that we could only imagine the bitter cries that fell on the ears of God's people who feared and respected his commands. Now, I'm of the opinion, and I want you to hear this, and I wanted to bring home to you who are listening, if you are obedient to God, If you are obedient, if you are a Christ follower, then I want to give you some assurances. God said that it is appointed every man wants to die. But he also said that he would keep us safe. And at the end of this, and I don't want you to say, oh, well, this preacher said, oh, well, if I do what I'm told in scriptures, then I won't get the coronavirus. I'm not saying that. I'm asking you that you do the things that you're supposed to. But I also want you to understand this, is that you shouldn't live in fear. You shouldn't get to the place in your life where you're scared to even go outside or that you're scared to be one place or another. But the solemn fact is that God is going to keep you safe. He promised that. And he said if you were obedient, he would keep you from those things. In the book of Acts, he tells us, we even see this in Paul's life, that if we are bitten by a snake, he will keep us safe. It will not cause harm to us. The whole point of that, if we were obedient, if we follow after those things, it will keep us safe. Now, that doesn't mean that we're always going to be safe when a snake bites us. And it doesn't always mean that we're not going to get sick. But it does mean that we are frail just like everybody else. But in the midst of a crisis, in the midst of fear and panic, we can find peace and hope that whatever comes our way is a godsend. That I am not upon the masses. I'm not going to get washed away in the flood of fear. I am going to be safe in God's arm. Bottom line, God's bigger than any virus. God's bigger than any plague. And he has the ability and the desire to keep people safe. And I beg of you that you mind the very thing that God wants. He doesn't want you to be perfect. He just wants you to be obedient to the best of your abilities. Every person was at wit's end. I can only imagine as those who were respecting God, as they were hiding into their homes, they were doing exactly everything that they said. You mentioned how everybody had gone through all these plagues, and then that night where they put the blood on the doorposts and upon the top of their door, and they hid inside, and they had their Passover meal, and as they got to the door, I can only imagine all the screams of the families who've lost their children, and all the bitter cries of the people who have endured so much. I can only imagine how hard and how scary and must have been for them to trust in blood. Must have been a very scary situation. Day after day, order after order, night after night, people would either be obedient or they would succumb to the very troubles that Moses and Aaron brought to the power of God. I chose another text today and I wanted to bring it to us, and that is Psalms chapter 91. Psalms chapter 91. He tells us here, we're going to start in verse 1 and go to verse 9. He says, "And he that dwelleth in the secret place of the Most High shall abide under the shadow of the Almighty." Listen, if you turn the sermon off and you said, "I've got better things to do," then listen, I want you to leave with one thing right now. And that is this. It says, "Though he that dwelleth," if you dwell in a secret place of the Most High, "he shall abide under the shadow of the Almighty." The number one thing that you need to be mindful of from hereafter is you have one responsibility as a Christian. It's not to change the world. It's not to be perfect. You have one job, and that is to abide with God. And you can do that in quarantine. You can do that in isolation. And you can do that anywhere. You can do that over the radio. You can do that in silence. You can do that in a crowd. You can do that in your driver's seat. You can do that on a boat. You can do that anywhere you need, because God is everywhere. And you need to understand that you have one obligation, is that you abide in his presence. And if we can do that, if we can be mindful of that, that we are in his presence each and every day, and I'm not talking about just under the times when we're talking about God, not just on Sundays, not just when we open our Bibles, but if we will make a vigilant effort and be mindful every moment of our lives that we need to dwell in the God's presence, that is where security and that is where faith grows. Verse 2, he says, "And I will say unto the Lord, he is my refuge and my fortress, my God. In him will I trust. Surely he shall deliver thee out of the snare of the fowler and from the noisome pestilence. He shall cover thee with his feathers, and under his wings shalt thou trust. His truth shall be thy shield and buckler. Thou shalt not be afraid for the terror by night, nor by the arrows that flieth by day, nor by the pestilence that walketh in darkness, nor the destruction that wasteth at noonday. 1,000 shall fall at thy side, and 10,000 at thy right side, but it shall not come nigh to thee. Only with thine eyes shalt thou behold, and see the reward of the wicked, because thou hast made the Lord, which is my refuge, even the Most High, thy habitation. Now, I want you to think about this right there at the end of that, what he's telling us. And the author of Psalms 91 is not mentioned. Some believe it was David. Some believe it was Moses. I personally believe it was Moses. But if you disagree, I'm not going to fight with you. It could be either. But the truth of the matter is, especially if you look at it in light of Moses, he mentions plagues, he mentions disease, he mentions all of these things, the pestilence, the noisome pestilence, the darkness. It almost makes it fit inside of our context this evening, or this morning rather, or whenever you're listening to this. But he says here, the latter part, he says, 1,000 will fall to thy side, 10,000 to thy right, but it shall not come nigh to thee. I find that almost as a promise to those who abide in God, who do exactly what he's asked. He says, there will be thousands of people who get sick. There will be thousands of people who live in disobedience who will fall thereby. But if you being obedient, he says, I will keep you safe. He says, they will fall left, right. He says, but it won't even come nigh to you. He says, it won't come close to you. And then in the last two verses, he says, and with thine eyes thou shalt behold and see the reward of the wicked. I want you to see here, he says, only, at that first part, only with thine eyes. And I know that many of us, we see how the enemy, we see that people who fight us and people who make fun of us seem like they prosper. But it says you only see that with your eyes. You know in your heart that they'll get their just desserts. He says, only with the eyes, only with the things in the material world, he says, are they going to be victorious? He says, you know, without a shadow of a doubt, that God is going to make you better at the end of it. That your suffering is only temporary and your reward is always going to come. And then the very last one, verse 9, says, because thou hast made the Lord, which is my refuge, even the Most High, thy habitation. I feel for this, and especially if it's Moses, which I believe, I feel it was Moses going through the very same things as the people were going through. Now, and with the time frame, and also nobody knows if this is what he's talking about. Nobody knows if there's the specifics of this psalm. But I want us to just, if you will, give me a little credence, if you will. Just give me a little bit of help in imagining that this is Moses speaking, and he says, he is my refuge. I imagine that he went through the darkness. I imagine he sat that night as those people bewailed the loss of their children. I believe he watched as hellfire came down and danced about him and about around his people, and he rested in the fact that it would not harm God's people. You know, I talk a lot about, and I want you to hear this, how God is protecting his people in the midst of their crisis. And we're going through a crisis. And I want you to know, to be sure, that God can and will protect his people. That does not mean that we won't feel the hardships of our neighbors feel. Here in our county, Carteret County, we have two confirmed cases. Nobody's died yet of this. But I fear the day that somebody does in North Carolina. And I wish, and this is just me, and if it so be that somebody passes away in North Carolina, I hope it's somebody that I can get in touch with, and I can just help them, and I can be a blessing to them, and I can pastor them, and I can mourn with them and weep with them and share with them the pains that they're going through. I believe every pastor wants that in their ministry. I believe that they want to suffer with their people, that they want to be heartbroken with them. They want to mourn with them and cry with them because they know what it means to be a Christian and to carry that burden one with another. It doesn't mean that we're not going to feel these hardships and feel the hardships of our neighbors, but it does not mean also that we won't get sick. But what it does mean is that God is in control. I don't want you to forget that. God is in control. It seems like everything's out of control now. It seems like everybody is running around with their chicken with their head cut off. That's the way it was told to me when I was a South Alabama kid. Everybody's just running around manic. Everybody's just running around not doing anything but screaming and running around and just being so distraught. As Christians, we need to understand something. If God is bigger than the 10 plagues of Egypt, then he's bigger than the coronavirus. He's bigger and is able to protect us from such. We still have to be attentive and obedient to the Word of God in the midst of this. And this is where my last 2 points come from. You know, everybody, especially in the text that we were reading there in Exodus, is that people got hurt when they weren't obedient, when they didn't hear and take to heart. They didn't listen to the very things that God was saying. I wanted my second point here is, how do we be obedient while isolated from the world? First and foremost, I can only imagine during this time that there were children and elderly watching as the plagues fell upon Egypt. It took a good bit of faith and strong spiritual family leaders to take the reins and reassure fearful members of their family that God was going to do great things at the end of it. To take a verse from the New Testament here, Matthew chapter 5, verse 9 says, "Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the children of God." Now, a lot of people, when you think peacemaker, I have a lot of pistol-packing friends of mine that when you say peacemaker, they immediately think a six-shooter. And I also have friends of mine, when you say peacemaker, they think law enforcement. But neither of those are what we're being talking about here. Peacemaker, literally, when you break it down, there's two Greek words that have been talked about here. And one of them means to pacify. Now, me being a new parent, we have a five-year-old son. His name's Elijah. We have a almost about to be two-year-old daughter named Addison, and we have another one on the way. And one of the hardest things for me as a parent was Addison, and I experienced it since moving here to Moorhead City, is that she does not want me to comfort her at all. There's nothing about the father-daughter relationship that she is not daddy's girl yet. She does not get comforted when I walk into him. She loves me to death. She likes it when I play with her. But when it comes to her pain, when it comes to her sleeping, she wants nothing to do with me. And it takes everything in my body, everything in my spirit to try and comfort and pacify her. You know, this is exactly what peacemakers talked about. The first word means to pacify, to calm a fear, to calm such chaos, to bring things back to center. And secondly, that the second word there, it means to be consistent, to always be have it be a part. It actually means to prolong. To not only pacify, but to pacify continually. Peacemaker, there is somebody who takes somebody who's in this chaotic state and says, listen, everything's going to be okay. You grab them by the shoulders or by the ears to make them look at you, and you say, listen, God is in control. I know what the world is telling you. I know that people are getting sick and people are dying. I know that the world is falling apart and is a downward spiral, but I need you to understand, and you've got to have this comfort in your life that God is bigger, that God is in control. Yes, it will all come down, and yes, everything will shatter and everything will fall apart, but that doesn't mean that you won't. That doesn't mean that you won't make it. If we trust in God, he will take care of you. We need to understand that. If you trust in God, he will take care of you. As we continue on, I want us to understand something about this. It's giving us the understanding that there will always be a need to de-escalate a chaotic and fearful world. Do you want to know what your job is during this time? And not give in to the fear-mongering. I understand that there has to be where I have to give information. Yes, I fully admit to that. We have two cases in the coronavirus, and I will constantly keep my members up to date about how it is spreading and how many people are affected and how I want them to be careful. But I also need you to understand this, is that that's not something that should change our lives. We should take precautions, but it should not change who we are. We should wash our hands. We should be socially considerate of others. We don't need to be hugging up on strangers. We don't need to be chasing into crowds, but we definitely need to practice what it is that is a safe distance from possibly getting contaminated or contaminating others. We need to have that idea that we want to be peacemakers. We want to be able to de-escalate things as much as possible. And listen, we live in a time where social media is king. Do me a favor. Do be a peacemaker today. And if you want to update people about the coronavirus, that's fine. But also tell people how much that God is in control still. Tell them, if you're going through something, I want to help. And our church wants to help. If you're going through something, we want to buy you groceries. We want to help things out. We want to be as much of a blessing as we can during this crisis. Now, we're a small church, and we can only do so much, but we're not going to turn you away. We're not going to sit there and say, listen, we cannot. We will do whatever we can to be a blessing. If you need your groceries picked up, if you pay for them, we'll go by and pick them up. If you feel scared enough to go out there, we want to be a peacemaker. We want to be a blessing to you the most as possible. As we're talking about being obedient in isolation, I want to bring up this last point. And many of our church people know this about me, but what I wish I'd have grown up in the 1900s with Theodore Roosevelt. He had so many great little pithy remarks that have just stuck with me. And I didn't even realize that they were being stuck to me until after I started researching him. And I was like, hey, I know that saying. I've said that saying. And then I go down to another one. I said, there's another one. One of my most famous ones was taught to me in Bible college. And he made this statement. He said, do what you can with what you have where you're at. You know, if the world's telling you, hey, you've got to be isolated, you've got to be quarantined, you've got to go to your house for 2 weeks and you can't do anything, I want you to know something, is that you can still be an effective Christian in isolation. If they're telling, if you are scared to a panic and you barricade the doors and you don't let anybody in, I want you to understand something. You can still be a faithful and productive and great Christian within that context. Right now, we are in a quarantine. But that does not mean that you have to be, that you are not being obedient to the Lord by being cooped up in a house. Matter of fact, we can do our best as a Christians if we make the best of this time. Right now, we're not too busy to pray anymore. We're not too busy to go to church. We can find it in our convenience at any Facebook church, any live church. Many churches are now doing this, that we are broadcasting our sermons so that people can see them, and you have time for it. You have time to pray. You have time to study scriptures. We're not too busy to check on the loved ones that we haven't checked in on forever. We're not too busy to spend that much-needed time with our families. If we were to be honest, we can actually give God more of ourselves now than we ever could have before. Our favorite restaurants are closing down. The shopping centers, the malls are all closing down because of this quarantine. You know, the schools have already shut down. Our families are at home. Listen, parents, we need to capitalize on these moments. Show your kids what it is to pray. Show your kids what it is to read scripture. Show them that God's in control. Listen, and I've pastored so many people who have had this burden where we have family members who live far away and we don't talk to them enough. We don't pray for them enough. Call them and pray for them. Pray with them. You know, you have so much more time on your hand, and if we were to be honest with ourselves, we can use this to the best of our abilities, and we can strengthen our spiritual walk and take care of all the fear at the same go. We can get two birds with one stone. We can help ourselves by spending our time in prayer and effectively winning our families and educating our friends and literally being the best people that we can, and also helping those who are just at the same time going through many crises themselves, calling them and checking in on them, loving on them. For those who are open, sending them a care package. As far as I know, the post office hasn't closed yet. You can still write letters. You can still give. You can give little packages that tell you how much you love them. Ramen noodles for the sick people. You know, you can give all the things that they love. Listen, you want a special thing? Send them some toilet paper. The world is empty. And if you can send a course of toilet paper, it'll tell them how much that you love them. The second thing I want us to talk about being obedient in the midst of this isolation, this might be the best time for you to see the power of prayer. I know God's going to see us through this. I know it. I know that with every plague and crisis that has ever experienced. Now, as a pastor, I've never gone through this. But I've also known this. I've going through history books, which I am a huge history buff. I've known that we've made it to the end of every one of them. Yeah, some of them were catastrophic. Yeah, thousands and thousands of people died in the past, but through every single one of them, we have pushed through. God has helped us pass through them. It was never an extinction level. It was God pursuing, giving grace and love and mercy at the end of every crisis. And at every single time, if I'm not mistaken, there is always a rise of the spiritual element inside of those nations that went through those hardships, where people depended upon God to get them through them, and when he answered, God did a great thing. I know that God's going to see us through this, but if you are finding doubt in your family's health and your family's lifestyle, this is going to be the perfect time for you to recenter your heart on God and to pray that his will be done. I don't know how God's going to speak to you. I don't know what he's going to teach you. I don't know how he's going to do this. But when you center back to God, when in the midst of crisis, and you give your life to him, you say, God, I can't protect my family the way that I need to. And I need you to intervene. I need you to pick up where I leave off. I need you to do what I cannot do. He will. I don't know what things will come through our way. But I have faith and I have hope that God is always going to be there for his people. He always has. It doesn't mean that we haven't suffered hardships. It doesn't mean that we never got sick. And it doesn't mean that we didn't feel pain. But it does mean that he was there with us. And it does mean that he'll help us through it. What makes this an Easter message? And what makes me want to start this is the beauty and the power of the sacrifice that was mentioned in chapter 12. We celebrate Easter during Passover because it was during Passover that Jesus was crucified and he rose again. Matter of fact, that's the meal that they were eating when they were getting ready to go into this. This is why they did the kangaroo court of Jesus, because they didn't want to do the whole jury and executioner bit on Passover. They had to expedite it and do it at night under the guise of the Roman, over the Roman government. We celebrate Easter for the very fact of what happened there. Now God, is one of the greatest storytellers and illustrators that has ever been. He has given us the perfect image of what we are to do while we're in our isolation. And we see this with the lamb in Exodus chapter 12. Look at verse 5. Exodus chapter 12, verse 5 says, And the lamb shall be without blemish. We believe as Christians that Jesus was perfect, that he was without blemish, without sin. He was the perfect sacrifice, a male of the first year. Ye shall take it out from the sheep and from the goats, and ye shall keep it until the 14th day of the same month. And the whole assembly of the congregation of Israel shall kill it in the evening, and they shall take the blood and strike it upon the two posts and upon the upper posts of the house wherein ye shall eat it. Now, I want to be very clear here. Look at verse 8. He says, and ye shall eat the flesh in the night. Roast the fire of unleavened bread, and with the bitter herbs ye shall eat it. Eat not it raw, nor sodden withal with water, but roast with fire, and his head with legs, his legs and his pertinence thereof. And ye shall let nothing of it remain until the morning, and that which remaineth of it until the morning shall be burned with fire. First thing here I want us to see in the perfect illustration between God's lamb during Exodus chapter 12 and his son, we bring in the only thing that is able to save us. We bring in the only thing that's able to save us. Now, Jesus is not in flesh and blood today. He's not out walking around. We can't invite him into our homes of that nature, but we can invite him into our hearts. It does tell us there that they had to consume of that lamb. And the Bible is very clear, especially in communion, when Jesus says, take, eat, this is my body. Take of this cup, for this is the blood of the New Testament. And he's telling them, you are what you eat. When you consume this, you are actively saying, I am taking you, Christ, in me. And I vow myself to you that I become like you. A Christian, the word Christian actually means to be a little Christ. That we take in the very thing that can save us. Listen, if you want to know the most important thing, we go back to our beginning parts of this sermon, the most important thing for you to do is to get close to God in the midst of all of this. That is your only obligation. That is your only thing. Christ is the greatest part of what this is. You need to bring in him to your life. Jesus, being the Lamb of God, must first be brought in if we are to do anything. It is our priority. If we're going to be saved from this coronavirus, the nation needs to open their heart to him. That means every individual. I'm not talking in the mass scale. I don't want the praise of men and I don't want the praise of politicians, but I want each and every person, woman, male, child, I want everybody to hear that Jesus is what's going to be that saves them. And they need to open their hearts and they need to take Jesus as he is and help him to be a part of their lives. It is a beautiful illustration back then. As a matter of fact, we see this secondly. We see as we continue to break this apart that we have to accept and trust in the power of the blood of the Lamb spilt for our safety. How tender it must have been. I find it hard to find a word that must have how they must have felt there that night when all of the firstborns died. Maybe it's just me, but being a red-blooded South Alabama man, I really believe that there's hardly anything I cannot do. I will fight tooth and nail, and I will do it several times and fail before I give up, if I give up. There's very few things when it comes to my family's safety that I will not do. I will protect them, and I will do what it costs. But could you imagine that the spiritual leaders of their home, once they have killed that lamb, and they take that blood, and they take those hyssop branches, and they place it in that blood, and they slap it on the doorpost, and they say, this is what's supposed to save us. Not fleeing, not getting away, not praying, but trusting in this sacrifice, this blood, and three splats of blood upon a doorpost. That's what's going to save us. Could you imagine how sweet it must have been as they stood inside that house and they realized that the blood is all they ever needed? That there was no work that had to be done, that they had to rely wholly upon the blood to make them safe. The same message that was in Exodus chapter 12 is the same message that we preach today. We trust in only the blood of Christ. It is his sacrifice that has saved us from eternal damnation. It is his sacrifice that saved us from death. Death has no more power over us. There is no sting for the Christian faith. We have faith that no matter what comes our way, we will survive. Devil can have this body, but God will make us be eternal. Well, I'm sorry, everlasting, immortal. God is the only eternal. He was ever before, forever before, and forever past, and forever in their future. We have a beginning, but as Christians, we never have an end. This part's not my notes, but I believe I have the time. I want you to see something here, and it's a beautiful image. I saw a picture that somebody had doctored up. They put it on a computer graphic, and they put a picture of the doorpost, and they put the hyssop on either side of the door, the left side and the right side, and on top of the branch, and in a faded view, they put Calvary. And they had Jesus, and he had his arms spread wide, and his two hands were nailed to the doorpost, and his crown of thorns was at the bridge of that door. And it was a beautiful understanding when you saw the imagery and you saw Jesus suffering on the doorpost and you recognized something that was very true back then and is still true today, that Jesus was the one who saved them, and if we'll trust in the blood, he'll save us too. I can't promise you that you're not going to get sick, but I can promise you eternal life. I can promise you heaven. I can promise you an eternity of bliss. But you've got to trust not in your works. You've got to trust in the sacrifice of that perfect lamb. You've got to trust in Jesus. The last thing. I'm sure many of us cringe at the thought of how much pain those cries in the night must have caused. How they bewailed that night after losing their child. After going through so much. After going through the rivers turning to blood and the frogs and the lice and the flies, losing the livestock, the hail and fire coming down from heaven, the boils, the darkness, all the things that happened, the locusts that came in and ate everything, the destruction that was in the wake of all these plagues, and then to top it off, the salt in the wound, the knife in the back that began to twist, was that their own family members, their very precious loved ones, were now falling. I want you to know something, is that God knows exactly what that feels like when He crucified His Son for you and for me. That pain, we think God is so perfect and so righteous that He doesn't have any emotions, but my Bible tells me that He is a priest, a high priest, that cannot not be touched with our infirmities. It is a double negative in that text, and it tells us that God feels the very same thing that we feel, that if we cry, He knows it. He keeps it. He measures it. He puts it in a bottle, and He puts it away, and He says, I have recorded it. I know what He feels, and I feel it with them. When we bewail the very thought that God allowed the firstborns to die, I want you to understand something, that God, even His perfect Son, who obeyed, who did everything right, was the very sacrifice for you and for me. And that's what Easter is all about. It's not about all the Easter eggs and all the funny feelings. It's not about all the happy, warm fuzzies. And it's not about everything that we drum it up to be in this society. But one of the sweetest things that Easter is that we were disobedient. We didn't listen. If we lived in Exodus chapter 12, we would be those people who lost everything, and we would be the ones wailing in the night. But in the New Testament, in the world that you and I live, that God, He turned the tables. He says, you have been disobedient. You have not listened to me. But to make things right, and because I don't want you to suffer, because I want you to know that I am a God of love and a God of grace, and I want the world to know this, I will give the only one who was ever obedient to me, and I will crucify Him, and I will put His blood upon the door, and the door will not be locked, and you will be allowed into my presence because of His sacrifice. Listen, and I want you to hear me. As you listen to this on your computers, as you listen to this on your phones, as your doors are locked and your windows are barred, and you have promised yourself that you are going to be quarantined and isolated and you aren't going to let anybody in, let God in. Let this time not go to waste. Understand what God did on Calvary's cross. And while you were disobedient, God gave you mercy and God gave you grace. And it's something worthy to be praised. I want to thank you so much for giving me your time. If you've listened to this entire video, I appreciate you, and I thank you so, or this audio rather, I appreciate you and thank you so much for allowing us to preach to you, allowing us to pastor you. If you live in Moorhead City, listen, we want to be a blessing. And I know that there are other churches here who have given their all to help people, and we may not be able to do much, but we want to help. We want to be a blessing. And if anything, if you call us, we'll pray for you, if nothing else. Because I don't want to see anybody suffer. I don't want to see anybody get damaged throughout this thing. But I want you to understand the importance of what this can do. This can be your greatest moment. This can be the moment where Christ is ever closer than He's ever been. I thank you for joining us. And I hope that you will continue to listen to these sermons. as we're going to continue doing these digitally, and so we ask that you'd come in, join us next Sunday as we continue this Easter series, talking about Christ and talking about the Easter season as it comes in. I'm hoping and I'm praying that this virus will be quenched by Easter and that we can worship together. But even if not, I want you to know that God is even so a part of your house as He is a part of this building. We don't believe that God is contained in walls. And so we hope that you have a great Easter, and we hope and we pray that you and your family stay safe, and that we will one day be able to come together and worship together as Christians who love the Lord and what He did for us. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.